Mark Marmo from Deep Well Services.
Excellent. Thank you for joining the program here today as we go to our phone line out to the East Coast, West Virginia phone number, Pennsylvania. I thought email address. I wasn't sure. So which part of the country are you in today, sir?
We are, well, the company's located out of Zelianople, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Well, we have yards in the Haynesville and the Permian also.
Okay. Of course, the reason for the interview here is you got some pretty exciting news, at least in the oil and gas industry it is, because it sounds like you guys are doing some hiring, and that is kind of a rare thing these days where people seem to be figuring out how to find business. So you went out and secured some business, so you guys are hiring, huh?
Yes, we've been hiring the last actually 3 years. We hired 450 people last year. We want to net at least 150 this year, if not more.
What kind of jobs are these that you're looking for?
Everything from working in the field to mechanics, drivers, accounting, you name it, admin, payroll. Yeah, it's a little bit of everything.
Where are you finding the growth from? Right now, where are you out on the East Coast? Or are you down in Texas? Where are you located right now?
Yeah, so we're in the Appalachian and Utica Basin, mm-hmm. Which we're extremely active right now. We're in the Permian, the Eagleford, and the Haynesville, which they are also, very strong.
We've had Joe Sinnott on the program quite a bit over the last couple of years. He's with Whitting Partners, and he's out of Pittsburgh, PA. He kind of gives us a nice update from time to time on some of the different Marcellus activity. Jim Willis from the Marcellus Drilling News, as well as Tom Shepstone from Natural Gas Now. Susquehanna County, of course, being one of the big prolific natural gas counties. Are you guys doing mostly natural gas out in the Marcellus, or are you, because I hear Haynesville, that's a very big gas play too. Are you guys mostly doing gas, or are you doing some oil too? Or,
well, we do, down in the Permian, Eagleford, we are doing oil.
Okay.
And then in PA, it's both natural gas liquids and dry gas. The Haynesville obviously is dry gas.
And so that's the next question. In the Bakken, where I'm located right now, they do a lot of wet gas, of course, where you've got seven, eight different kinds of molecules, hydrocarbons that you can separate apart. Dry gas, a little bit different. In the Haynesville and Marcellus, of course, with the dry gas. You're finding some oil activity in Eagleford and the Permian as well. Are you hiring down there, or all different areas? Are all four shale plays?
We're hiring for every play.
Okay.
In the U.S.
So if somebody is listening right now and they want a job, what's the walk us through the process? I mean, it's tough because you don't want to give out your cell phone number, but at the same time, you need people hired.
Yeah, we do. We'll hire as many as we can this year. The best way to reach us is through our website, www.deepwellservices.com. Get in touch with Brandy Blazer, Blazier.
And we'll have the links at the Crude Life's website as well for those different areas. Talk about the genesis of the company. How long have you guys been around? What's the workplace culture like? Give prospective employees an idea of why they might want to come work there.
We've been around since 2008. We mainly operated out of the Appalachian Basin until 2018 when we moved into the Permian. And then last year when we moved into the Haynesville. We're also actually in Argentina right now and soon to be in working for Saudi Aramco. So lots of room to grow. We give everybody a career path here. When someone comes in, from day one, if they're going to go into the field as a green hat, we show them how they're going to get to being a supervisor. There's an IADC accredited training program we have here. We're all about continuous improvement and continuous education. We spend probably $300,000 to $400,000 a year on just educating people from business classes to emotional intelligence classes to well control. So it's a culture mainly built upon Like I said, it's continuous improvement. We are the main focus here is one team, one family. And we try to treat people with empathy, and we have a servant mentality at this company. And you're not a number. You'll never be a number. We have 550 people, and we go above and beyond to know everybody, help them personally or professionally.
You mentioned Saudi Aramco. You mentioned, I think it was South America or Argentina. I can't remember. Argentina. You've got four different plays or shale plays or at least oil plays happening here in the United States. Is that going to satisfy you for a little while? Are you looking beyond that? That's pretty aggressive what we just laid out.
Yeah, well, we've in 2012 we did $7.5 million. We'll do over $200 million this year. We grow, but we grow responsibly. And we've proven that over the last 4 to 5 years that we know we put a plan out there and we execute. So yeah, if we can add people, we will grow it even more. But the people problem right now is the biggest issue. We just can't find enough.
You know, one of the issues happening right now is inflation, of course. People are trying to figure out how to make their personal inflation work because apparently the chickens have joined a union now and they need to have egg prices triple to what they were before. That's my little chicken joke there. Or maybe it's a union joke. I guess I'm not sure. But this was actually a cartoon we did in our business newspaper back in 2008 when egg prices rose, and it said, what did the chickens join a union? And I thought, boy, that's funny how that actually came back full circle. But anyway, talk to me a little bit about your inflation within the industry. The crude life we started talking about is $100 oil, the new $50 oil back in 2020, because we started seeing the price of steel going up. And if the price of steel goes up, everything is going to go up. And then when the price of oil went up, everything is going to go up too. So we're starting to think the $50 oil might be, or $110 oil might be $50 oil. We're not sure. How does that, you guys are apparently figuring out how to make that chemistry set work, but with the spike of inflation that's happened, how have you guys been able to manage that?
We manage the company with a strong balance sheet. We have no debt, which allows us to be able to free up. We've always operated with high wages. We have a focus on paying people what we feel is 10 to 15% better than market. So we've always been used to running that way, and we run lean elsewhere to be able to pay our people more. And we aren't the cheapest. We're probably the highest priced of anybody in the basins of what we do. And inflation has affected everybody, but when you add value to companies, you can get your price, which can cover that inflation.
You mentioned that you're one of the higher priced. Well, that for me means that you apparently must have the quality to back it up if you've been around since 2008. Talk to me about how somebody, if they spend more money up front, how they save money on the long haul, because that is kind of the idea, isn't it?
That's it. You know, what our focus is we add value, and we add value by showing up, getting onto that well safely, and then getting off as quickly as possible. So we save that burn rate per day, which is probably, when we're on a pad, is about $70,000 to $80,000 a day. Our focus is to get off of that pad a day or two, or however fast and safely that we can, to save the company that much money. Most of our competitors, they want that day rate, and our focus is to, if we save you on that day rate, you're going to give us more wells.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, repeat business, that's the name of the game.
That's it.
That is. I'm looking at your website right now, deepwellservices.com, established in 2008, small town Appalachian roots to become one of the premier OFS companies, over 70 different E&Ps across North and South America. So 70 different of them, huh? Well, you guys have really, yes. You know, talk to me about the different shale plays, because that this is more, I guess, for me, which I find kind of fun, because when I started learning about the industry back in probably 2008, actually, when I was introduced to it, for me, I found the chemistry of the different regions fascinating. When I was in my former life, I was a publisher, and we did a magazine called From House to Home. In fact, we had five of them in Pennsylvania, Easton, Pennsylvania. We featured Mario Andretti's house, and we were down in State College, PA, and Washington, Pennsylvania, just south of Pittsburgh. And so we know Pittsburgh pretty well, or the Pennsylvania pretty well. But what I found interesting was the different geographies and landscaping. You've got seven different areas of the United States for planting, essentially, different regions. You know, if you're drilling in Tuscaloosa, that's pretty muddy and clay. So you got to spend a lot more money to get that resource out of the ground. Whereas, you know, you get to the Haynesville, that's a little bit more user-friendly for the operator. How are these different shale plays that you're in? Are they able to, you know, can you bring the same equipment? Do you got to bring different equipment to a different shale play? How different are they? How similar are they?
It's not so much different equipment. It's the kind of equipment we've built and designed, the efficiencies behind it. But we can handle anything from a 10,000 PSI well to you know, a 500-pound PSI well. We can handle, we've drilled all of the longest laterals. We've cleaned out all of the longest laterals in onshore U.S. Nobody can compete with us on our pressure or long lateral stuff. So we've really designed the company around that, where the market was going. And so, you know, if you're in the Marcellus, you're, you know, drilling maybe a 15,000-foot lateral, it's not going to be as high pressure, but whereas you're over in the Utica and you're on a 7,000 PSI well. So we have the talent, we have the equipment to really operate anywhere in the world, unlike anyone else. We have the largest fleet of what we have to do in the world. And I would say we're probably, even being a private company, maybe the fifth largest workover company in the world.
I'm caught up on the pressure part, because boy, I that pressure seems to be like the secret sauce when you're talking about any sort of energy extraction, and that just seems like such a science. I used to think it was the frac chemistry, but I think it's more of the pressure involved. Having that's like an art. It's like an art to understand pressure, isn't it?
It really is. The people that work on these wells, work over that wellhead, are some of the smartest people you'll ever meet.
They see the world different, don't they? They just see it different.
They really do.
Yeah.
They really do. But, you know, they get the reputation of being that roughneck. But these guys are, and ladies, we have ladies working out there too, that are extremely just talented, highly educated in what they do, and very intelligent.
When it comes to the, I don't know if it'd be, if you want to call it ESG, if you want to call it environmental, if you want to call it, I don't know, reclamation, recycling, there's a lot of different words that you can be a little bit more entry level, or you can get really aggressive with the language. So talk to me a little bit how you guys are handling that side of the world, whether it be, you know, recycling water, or, you know, meatless Mondays, or maybe some new emission management thing that we've never heard of. I'm not sure, but that seems to be, you know, ESG reports. Everybody seems to be doing one now. So,
well, yeah, you can see on our website we take the ESG reporting serious. I focus everybody more on the social and governance aspect of everything. You know, the politically correct, you know, when to say the environmental, we're quicker on wells. We're not using as much fuel. We're not burning diesel because we're more efficient on the wells. We save chemicals going down hole. So we do our part on the environmental side of things. But the most important thing there is the social and governance. It's the making sure our people are educated, have a great workplace, have a career path, are paid well, that they can take care of their family. And then, you know, the governance piece is we have a quality management system unlike no other. I think we're the only ones in the probably North America that do what we do, that have a API Q2 QMS. So, and then our training program is IATC accredited. So, you know, the social and the governance piece is what I really like to focus on, you know, in community. We probably gave over $10 million in the last year to the community via hotel nights, food, and, you know, fuel purchases in the community. We donate to the local community here. We sponsor a lot of things. So that's really what I focus on, more so than on the ESG part.
Do you mind if I ask you about your journey to ESG? You seem like you're pretty open about it. That's the only reason I ask. And you don't have to get into the details. I just have, I've run into a lot of brick walls. So
yeah. Well, I mean, you know, when you're in a position where you need to just be aware of everything that's going on, you know, you pay attention to it. You want your company, even though it's privately held, you want your company to be like a Halliburton or Schlumberger, and you want to be responsible. So you pay attention to those things. Like I said, I'm more of the, you know, I think our industry doesn't defend what we do environmentally very well. We don't get enough credit. We're not going to get help from the media in that respect. But we're all aware of it. We want to be responsible. I actually think that some of the best people in the world environmentally are the EMPs and the OFS services. So we pay attention to it. We're always going to be responsible. We're not going to hurt people. We're going to have safe operations, and we're not going to hurt the environment. I mean, we're drilling in our backyards when you're in the Appalachian Basin, right? I mean, I have wells on my farm. So I just have always been aware of it. We pay attention to it. I guess I'm just not as politically correct as most.
No, and I understand that. In fact, what you were talking about is very similar to the way that we kind of did it at the Crude Life, where we didn't so much embrace it as much as we're aware of it, because it's to me, it's like this chat GTP automated robot thing. If you're in the world of writing or arts and crafts and all that stuff, it ain't going away. So you better figure out how to embrace it into your world, or it's going to take you out. And that's what I saw with the ESG. I went, okay, this ESG is everything. If you want to walk to the store and buy an apple, there's an ESG score behind that. And then I saw the show called The Good Life, and they flat out explained ESG without explaining ESG. What they said was everything you do has a positive and negative score in heaven and hell. And they gave some example of some guy that in the 15th century brought his grandma flowers, but because he planted the flowers himself and he watered the flowers and he didn't use any pesticides and all these different things, it was a positive ESG score, but they called it a good life score or something like that. And then in the modern day, when he bought his grandma flowers, it was a minus score because it was mined by, you know, child labor, and the CEO was sending unwanted pics in the middle of the night of his genitalia, and, you know, they went through all the different things that we do in today's society. And that's, you know, that's ESG in a vacuum. In a perfect world, it looks fantastic, but it's like communism. In reality, it doesn't work because there's a thing called the human element. And when you introduce the human element, you just got to keep trying to improve. And if you just keep trying to improve, that's as good as it gets, guys.
You really said it right. And being responsible in your community, helping to develop your community, helping develop people, making sure, you know, our people go home every night to their families. That's really where the ESG thing should come in. We have great governance of the company. We have 30% minority. Mm-hmm. You know, and none of that stuff is virtue signaling or being woke. It's just what we are. And when you sit back and you think about it, the one of the best industries in the world are oil and gas at all of this. They're one of the most responsible. And I don't think that there's a better industry in the world for actually treating people with dignity and giving them a great career.
One of the things that I've been speaking about ESG since 2015, I kind of mostly stumbled into it because we started doing an ESG report on the crude life every week with the CEO of Meridian Energy Group with their refinery that they were going to build in North Dakota. So he saw the pushback that was coming, and to his credit, he felt it was very important to do a weekly radio and podcast, because we're on the radio up here. We have about 20 radio stations. We're on up and across five states in the Bakken here. And he felt it was very important to educate the public because he just was a part. He's from Irvine, California is where he lives. So he's very aware of this woke culture and the cancel culture and the anti-fossil fuel movement. And so we did it. You know, we made sure that every week we had a different engineer on, we had a different citizen, a CEO, somebody involved in the project in some way or another, all walks of life, even if they had problems with it. Because one thing about ESG, if you're civil, we'll give you a voice, that's fine. So we started getting, you know, different conferences inviting us to come speak and all these other things. Well, what we found was leadership did not like it. They did not like it because they don't want to be aware of it. They don't want to talk about it. And this is one of those things where I kept trying to tell them, no, this, you can't look away from this. This is connecting with the kids. In Colorado, they had advertisements that didn't even have words. All they did was have a woman holding a baby with an oil rig in the background. That was it. That was it. That was the whole ad. So that's what I was trying to educate people on. And so I'm very happy to hear that you're accepting the awareness of it, not necessarily the ideology, not necessarily everything about it, but you're just aware of it. And are you getting any pushback from your colleagues? Or is any, because I didn't even know you guys had it on your website. That is gutsy.
Yeah, well, no pushback.
Okay.
But I think it's, it's just all about being transparent. And,
right.
You know, just because I don't agree with what causes climate change doesn't mean we're not going to be responsible stewards in the community and in our industry. So, yeah, we got to be aware. We got to be aware of people that want to put us all out of business and how to react to that.
That was a thing that we kept trying to explain to the average person. And we do a pretty good job with some of our different educational entertainment style things with kids, because it's the kids are the ones that seem to be in the driver's seat these days. And I went through this with agriculture. So I grew up in the 80s where the farmer got taken out by the grocery store. And what's happening right now is the energy worker is getting taken out by the light switch. And it's right before our eyes, because you go to the grocery store, you get your ground beef. There's no such thing as a cow. You go to the, you know, light switch, you turn it on. There's no such thing as coal or natural gas. It's light. It's power. It works just fine. And it was tough because I grew up around farmers and they had a hard time accepting that movement, you know, that everybody was excited about the new grocery store and then they started shaming the farmer. Well, that's what I'm seeing happening right now. Everybody's excited about these EV vehicles and then they turn around and shame the people who created it. Because renewables ain't doable without fossil fuelables. That's just the way it goes.
No, and it's not sustaining.
No,
and it never will be. And people that are afraid to say that it's not sustaining, I think are wrong. You know, our industry just doesn't have enough people that's defending it. You know, people like Chris Wright, who do an amazing job for us, Nick Deolis at CNX. We just don't have enough of these CEOs out there willing to stand up and defend, and we've got to get better at it because this is the greatest industry in the world. It makes the world go.
Well, you know, you're doing a good job. You're coming on this program. You're being active out there. What advice would you have for others to be like a Chris Wright from Liberty Oil? I'm sorry, Liberty Energy, or yourself, or some of these other CEOs to get out there, or even just backing some, you know, employees to do it, as opposed to maybe not the CEOs necessarily. Because one of the things we did with the Crude Life, as soon as my hair started growing gray, I got a younger guy in to interview Harold Hamm immediately, because I did not want to have two old guys with gray hair talking on social media. There's no kids watching that. So I went and I got the young guy, you know. So maybe sometimes it's not bad to get some younger people to get behind the industry too. But that's hard to find.
A big focus of ours is, you know, winning these hearts and minds of the young people. I'm a Western PA born and raised kid.
Randy Moss. Woo!
Yeah, I would love to put 100% of the Western PA people to work at Deepwell. We go out to the high schools. We go out to, we actually teach accredited course at Penn State, Pitt, Marietta, West Virginia, on what we do to the petroleum engineers of those schools. Our focus has been, we're going out to the younger community. We want to recruit, of course, but number two, we want to win the hearts and minds and show them, you know, this is a great industry. You can sustain a family. It's not 10 an hour, but we're not. We are extremely responsible. We're focused on people. We're focused on career paths. And for somebody to, in the inner city, to come out and make $50,000 at year one as a green hat, out of, you know, that probably was never going to go to college. How great is that? Within 8 to 10 years, if you go through your competency program, you'll be making $250,000, and that's only working 6 months a year.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got to get people to realize that this is the kind of environment they can come into that's going to, you can build an amazing career and support a family on this job.
Well, let's talk a little turkey here real quick while we have you. We might as well let you have a plug for your company. I mean, I don't think you need any more business. You need employees, but at the same time, what services, you know, specifically do you guys offer?
We are really a technology and training company that just so happened to have hydraulic completion units. These completion units can clean plugs, they can fish tools downhole, they can do workovers, they can do cleanouts, tow preps, you name it. These things can work, and we've proven that we'll grow all over the world, work in any basin. So that's what we're all about.
What's a hot tap kit?
We have that.
Yeah, I'm looking at your brochure right now, and I've never seen that word in consecutive words like that. And I thought I knew this industry at least better than the average person. So a hot tap kit. Okay.
Yeah, sometimes you have a little bit of a problem on a well. You got to put that in and slowly bleed it off.
Okay. Is that an industry term, or is that your guys's?
That's an industry term.
Okay. That's new to me. See, learn something new every day right there. I thought I know all the other terms that I'm seeing here, but I didn't see the hot tap kit. That's cool. Okay. Well, I appreciate the time today. And, of course, the moral of today's story is you guys are hiring. You need, more than 100 people?
150 we net people this year. We'll have some attrition. We'll probably hire over 200, 220, 230 people.
And these are everything from administration to out in the field to rookies. If you're a rookie, you'll take them and train them, huh?
We will train them. We're more than happy to train them. We trained, we onboarded 430 people last year and had, I think, over 30,000 hours of training.
Okay. Any final thoughts that you want to, anything we left out or anything you want to reiterate?
Thank you for what you do. And we really appreciate the defense of our great industry. I can't thank you enough.